This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon as we cover different aspects of life in Douglas County. Logan Bennett from the Oregon State University Extension Service, thanks for coming in.
Hey, Kyle. Good to see you again.
So, talk about this time of year in the world of agriculture. A lot going on. Let's start out with the wine grape harvest.
Yeah, so wine grape harvest has been a little bit odd this year. The weather's been a little funky, so we started a little early. Some folks were harvesting pretty early in September, and now we're kind of towards the end, although there's still probably a few weeks left to harvest.
That was the interesting thing, is I have talked to a number of those people periodically, and it really depended on which part of the county they were in, of course, based on the climate and also just the natural growing cycle of whatever varietal they were working with.
Right. So depending on what variety of grape you're growing, they have different Brix requirements, and Brix just means how much sugar is accumulated in the grape. And so for red grapes, we harvest at a little bit lower sugars, and they were ready to go a little earlier in the season for some varieties. Some are a little higher sugars. And for white wine grapes, they're typically the earliest that we harvest from. But this year we've seen some red varieties harvested early in September and some all the way till now or a little bit later. And that's largely dependent on whether what the natural climate looks like this year and topography, that kind of stuff.
Well, and I know there were some people a little skittish as they were beginning harvest. Some of the weather we had right then caused some of them to have to make some tough decisions sometimes about, do I wait or do I do it now before this hits?
Absolutely. With wine grapes, we're always looking at rain. If there's smoke that year, we're looking at that. And then obviously we're also looking for when the first frost is going to be too.
Yeah, and we haven't got to that point yet, thankfully, but we have gotten down there a bit. What about the rest of the agriculture community? I'm out at the farmer's market a lot in Roseburg, but I don't pay close attention to harvest cycles of different things. I will admit I was actually surprised to see corn on the cob last week.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of crops are kind of done for the year. We're still looking at harvest for certain things like apples. We're still pulling harvest for apples. A lot of your perennial fruits, so raspberries, blackberries, blueberries, they've been done for a while. I noticed the farmer's market has a new addition this year of kiwi berries, which is awesome. It's about time to harvest for that. We're just through harvest for kiwi berries. And vegetable crops are still going. There's still a lot of veggies that are being harvested. Some are being planted right now. I saw some beautiful CSA boxes last week from a few different farms. So, yeah, we're still going strong on veg.
So you mentioned the kiwis. I've actually got a container of those ripening because last Saturday the grower said, give them a few days.
That's awesome.
And so that's from Lake Farms out in the edge of Sutherland there. And that's one of those unique crops. I know that the prior owner of the property had already been working on that for a while. And I'll be curious. I'm not sure I've ever actually had a local kiwi. I'm sure I've had kiwi with, other things, but imported from who knows where.
Yeah. So touching on the local part, it's important to know there's two different kinds of kiwis. There's the kind you see at the grocery store that are big and they're kind of hairy. We don't grow those here. What we grow are called winter or hard variety kiwis. So they're small kiwi berries that can be harvested and then run through the same equipment that we run blueberries through. So it's common to see kiwis and blueberries planted together. What's really cool about the Lake Farm is that they've got two unusual crops. They're doing olives and kiwis.
Yeah, and I don't know what the cycle is in terms of time on the olives.
Yeah, olives, we're still learning a lot about how they function. Typically, olive harvest happens right about now or a little bit farther out. We're really trying to get as far into the season as we can to harvest before the first frost.
And that's an interesting project, especially since I happen to know those folks and he works for one of the vineyard companies to the north and manages vineyard land down here and up to the north as well. And, oh, by the way, a little hobby farm on the side as well.
The lakes are great people.
So talk about other crops right now that are still coming in.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, depending on the variety of apple you're growing, you might be harvesting now or a little bit later into the season. Some apples can go really kind of into the winter. Pears, mostly done, but I'm still seeing a few out there. And still a lot of veggie crops. So bok choy just got harvested this week. Like you mentioned, you're seeing some corn out there. So there's a few varieties. And if you're looking into winter crops, oh, obviously before we get to that, it's pumpkin season too.
Oh, yes, that's true. And you know, I always look at pumpkins occasionally. I don't really eat pie anymore, I guess. But I certainly don't, you know, if I'm going to have one, I have one that's made. I'm not messing with that whole process, nor is my wife at this point in life. But some people, I noticed that at Farmer's Market, there were a couple different displays, at least. Some of these things are huge.
Yeah. The cool thing about pumpkins, if you like to make your own pies, we grow great sugar pumpkins here. So you could, if you wanted to, hypothetically, plant your pie and then harvest and turn it into something you could eat that way, which is really cool. But we also grow a bunch of different varieties of pumpkins here. I've got a planting down north I work with that's got some that have giant warts. Some are white. We've got ones that are really big. Yeah, we have a lot of varieties around here.
Well, and the largest display I noticed was near the front of the farmer's market there with Laney Farms. And they were very busy, but I was kind of curious how those all come out looking so unique and different. Not two are the same.
Yeah, it all depends on what kind of ground you've got them growing on, if you're doing raised beds or if they're on flat ground, and then management of the vines. The plant itself can get huge. So there's some management that goes into that as well.
Well, and I know that sometimes you see somebody growing the biggest pumpkin in whatever state, but I'm sure a lot of other things behind the scene go into making that happen. That's just sort of a little geeky fun if you're really into it.
The giant pumpkin scene is a very unique sort of niche of agriculture. And I believe, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but a new record was just set for the largest pumpkin in the world.
Wow. So how is the weather? Because it's been rather interesting. How has it treated ag in recent weeks?
Yeah, I think for the most part, folks are just kind of getting through it. But this mix of rain and sunshine can always be a concern for fungal development and bacterial development. So it's something we have to keep an eye out for.
Well, and one of the things there too is it's like you wonder if some other things are going to want to start growing, but then they stop because the weather changes.
Absolutely.
That sort of thing. So it has been interesting, and the rest of the week is going to kind of continue that bumpy ride. Talk about, and one of the things we're trying to do here is kind of provide information that a lot of people don't know if you're not around ag all the time. Once farmers get done with whatever the crops they have for this period of the year, what do they do with the land?
Right, that's a great question. And although it might seem like we're kind of wrapping up at this time of year, that is not the case. Oftentimes, when you're finished harvesting your crops, the next thing you need to do, especially if you're growing perennial crops, is to take soil samples and tissue samples. Those give you a really good idea of what you did this year, why your crop looked the way it did, what succeeded and what didn't. It helps you plan for the next year's fertilization process.
Now, are there some parcels of land where people grow different crops at different times of the year?
Absolutely. Especially if you're doing row crops, like if you're growing veggies, it's really common to plan a grow schedule where you start something early in the spring and it gets harvested, and then you're moving into your next crop and that gets harvested. And there's benefits to that. Obviously, there's a financial benefit because you can grow multiple crops in a year, but there's also some disease resistant stuff and it helps suppress weeds. There's ways to get really creative with it. I've got one grower around here who grows, I think it's squash, and then he grows two herb varieties underneath on either side. And it's cilantro and parsley, if I remember correctly. Those get big enough to harvest before the first flower of the squash And so you've gotten three crops out of one row.
So, and these are all like literally together.
Yeah. Right next to each other.
Wow. And in my segmented brain, I would keep them separate, sort of like vegetables versus other things on your plate.
Sure. And it makes sense to sometimes, but there can be some really good benefits of intercropping, or if you're planting crops next to each other that grow well together, you can get benefits for both of them that way.
Interesting. All right, more with Logan Bennett when we come back. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show coming up at 4 o'clock with the Commissioner of Dirt. We're talking ag in Douglas County. Logan Bennett from the Oregon State University Extension Service. We were just talking about timing for crops, what you can do at different points of the year. And you mentioned during the break you've actually got a class tomorrow that kind of ties into that.
Yeah, absolutely. So even though it seems like it's pretty late in the year to be putting in crops, there's still plenty of time to plant your garlic and your shallots. And tomorrow, we'll be doing the Pavilion Series at 10 a.m. out of the Discovery Garden, talking about just that.
And so how do people sign up for that?
The great thing about this particular series, the Pavilion Series, is that it's absolutely free and no sign-ups required, so just show up.
So at what time?
That'll be from 10 to, I think it's 10 to noon.
All right. And, of course, the Extension website's got more information.
Absolutely.
On that. So you mentioned planning for spring. What about, what is the land, does the land in some cases just kind of sit during the winter, or does it vary?
So there's a few options there. If you're running perennial crops, you've already got something in there. Just make sure that you're taking care of your plants during the winter. There's some things to do there. If you're growing vegetable crops or row crops, it's a good idea to put in something as a cover crop or mulch your land. What we want to do is really try to reduce erosion. The best way to do that is keep living roots in the ground, but if that's not possible, try to mulch it at least.
So when you say cover crops, what could that include?
Yeah, oftentimes what we see is a mix between a grain and a legume, so peas and oats is really common, and that's got a few benefits. It puts a bunch of organic matter back into the ground, it can fix nitrogen, and depending on where you're growing, you want to be really cautious, or conscious is the right word there, of what you plant, because there's benefits to a lot of these cover crops. But for example, if you're growing in a raised bed, you want to be able to pull those crops out when it's the right time.
Now, once you have grown these crops, are these things that you are doing just to help the land, or are these products you could sell as well?
Depends on what you grow. You may be able to sell some of the seed product, or depending on if you put flowers in, you might be able to make bouquets. But the main purpose of this is to improve your land, and then you can incorporate it back in as organic matter and improve your crops for next year.
And, you know, a lot of times if we have, we've had periodic floods around here, the 96 flood, the last big one of particular note. I was just talking to somebody about aspects of that the other day. And if you're not in the ag community or not farming land, you don't always think about this. But I recall in the 96 flood, you know, we had some landslides and some things like that. And where people that own property that are in ag literally are losing part of their land because it just, you know, hit the river and kept going. And they're kind of starting over. You know, I've heard people after the 96 flood talk about, you know, how many cubic yards of soil they lost off their property. And, you know, if you just have a typical house in town and a yard, you don't really think about that being a big deal, but it really is.
It's a huge deal. With giant floods like that, it's going to be difficult to control land movement, but it certainly helps if you've got root mass in the ground that's anchoring that soil down. It takes about 100 years to form 1 inch of topsoil, so it is a very slow renewable resource. So we have to be really cautious about how we manage it and how to prevent losing it.
And, I mean, obviously you can go purchase it But, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that, too, in terms of what kind of soil you want to get based on what kind of land you have.
Right. And if you're purchasing soil, it's really difficult to change the native texture of your soil profile. So you really want to retain what you've got so that you can make sure that it's a functional piece of land to grow on. It would take a lot of soil and a lot of money to change your texture.
Wow. Things to consider. What about... once things have slowed down, is that when people tend to work on equipment as well or reevaluate what they need for next year?
Yeah. So if you are growing your food and you've harvested and you've taken your soil samples and your tissue samples and you've gotten those back, the next steps are planning on what your fertilization schedule is going to look like either in the fall or in the spring. And then maintenance of equipment. So if you're a home gardener, make sure that you've got your shovel sharpened and your other tools and put away so that they're ready to go for next year. And then for folks who are running machines, oftentimes this is the time for maintenance.
You're supposed to sharpen your shovel.
Yeah. Huh? Okay. Cuts in better.
See, and part of this, people will laugh, but I have some tools that I have them, but I rarely use them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't grow any crops at home. I don't, you know, I'm not moving soil around or whatever. I'm mowing the yard and kind of get, you know, trying to keep up with the weeds and all of that. But I'm terrible at that. In 30 years in this house, I don't probably have the same shovel I moved in with.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And it's never been sharpened.
I don't know if everybody does that, but it's certainly helpful.
Wow.
We've got a guy that's a master gardener. His name's Fred Alley, and his specialty is tool maintenance. So next year at the plant sale, stop by and talk to him.
Yeah, and I get Mike Winters and other people make fun of me for things like that. It's like, there's some things I'm good at, and there's other things that's like, you know what? That's why you guys are good at it, and I will probably just purchase what you're selling.
Fair enough.
You know, that kind of thing. Are local farmers making a decent living?
Yeah, I mean, with any kind of agricultural crop, it's definitely important to watch the market because it fluctuates a lot. But there's still definitely some opportunity to be to get a good living being a farmer here.
And do we still have some new folks that are new getting into being farmers?
Absolutely. I've worked with a few new farmers this year. It's really exciting to see folks still wanting to get into agriculture and live that lifestyle or work that career.
Because I know sometimes some of the heritage families in the area or in other places too, there may come a point based on people's skill set or desires where the next generation is not interested.
Yep, and you're right. Overall, there's a trend where we're seeing a decrease in legacy farms. And that's something that we want to pay attention to and help folks transition. If, for example, the family's not going to continue on with farming, we want to see other folks move into that space. We want to keep agriculture alive.
Now, what about other things that Extension is offering coming up here?
Yeah, so we actually have a few classes coming up. Like I mentioned, we have the garlic and shallots class tomorrow at 10. Shelby Philly is hosting a program called Weed Wednesdays right now, and it's every Wednesday through November 15th. And that's sort of a long-form discussion over Zoom, talking about different problematic weeds in the county, kind of identifying what the issues are and what solutions there might be about that. Next week, we have a Madrones class going on, taught by Alicia Christensen, and I think it's going to be A to Z of Madrone trees, so everything you might ever need to know about them. Later in November, we're going to have a wreath-making class out of forest materials. That's going to be Alicia again. And then last thing of the year in December, we're going to be hosting an online webinar about purchasing land. So if you're thinking about buying land, or if you're a real estate agent selling land, what should you know in context for agricultural production?
And I imagine for real estate professionals, it's very different than selling your typical in-town house and property.
Right. Because we're utilizing that landmass to grow crops on, it's really important to know things about zoning, water rights, soil textures and types, what drainage we've got, topography, all of that stuff plays in.
And I imagine, I know in past years, certainly some of the real estate agents. There were particular folks that specialized in some of the ag land in particular, while other folks would just let them deal with it as they dealt with other things.
Yeah, absolutely. And these real estate folks already know a whole lot, but we just want to provide any kind of information we can that'll help when making those decisions. What is your soil type like? Should you be planting peach trees here, or maybe this is a better site for a vineyard, or maybe it's not an agricultural site, stuff like that.
All right, a lot to learn, and Oregon State University Extension Service, how do they connect with you?
You can always give us a call at the Extension office. My phone number there is 541-236-3015, or shoot me an email, logan.bennett@oregonstate.edu.
All right, Logan, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.